Okay, gang, so with that trouble out of the way, let me just turn off this camera. We're ready to start. Okay, all right, let's chant Jai Radha Madhava. Jaya Radha Madhava. Kunjabihari, Jaya Radha Madhuva, Kunjabihari, Gopi Jana Vallabha, Giri Bharat Hari, Gopi Jana Malabha, Giri Bharat Hari, Yashodanandana Brajajana, Ranjana Yasodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Jaya Radha Hava Kunjabihari Gopi Janavallabha Giri Vadadhahude Gopi Janavallabha Giri Vadadhahude Yasundana Rajajanananjana Yasundana Radhajanananjana Yamunatira Vanachari Yamunatira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Jai Om Vishnupad, Paramahansa, Parabhitakacharya, also Teta, Siddhashi, Shimad, His Divine Grace, Abhaya Chananada, Bhaktivedanta, Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, Gijai, ISKCON Founder, Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, Gijai, Anandakoti, Vaishnava, Vrindi, Gijai, Namacharya, Srila Haridas, Thakur, Gijai, Prem, Sekhahoti, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadhara Sivasati Gaura Bhaktavinoda Gijaya Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath Swayam Kund Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Gijaya Vrindavanam Gijaya Mathuranam Gijaya Jagannathaswami Gijaya Yamunamayi Gijaya Srimati Gulasi Devi Gijaya Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Gijaya Gaura Premananda Hari. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Budhale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Namani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Bacharni Nibhishesha Srinivadi Paschat Deja. So Om Ganata Vedanta Shah Garanjana Shalakaya Chakshura Meditam Yena. Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Jai. So before we go and read the Nectar of Devotion, we're going to chant this prayer written by Srinivasa Acharya. Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipano Loka Tri Bhuvane Manjo Sharanya Karo Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajana Mantena Vaptoliko Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghu Yuko Shri Jiva Gopala Kohu I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatt Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. All right. So we will continue with our study of nectar devotion, and today we're, let's see, hold on a second. Let me share the screen here. Give me 1 second. Sharing. We're talking about, we're actually getting an introduction, in this portion of the nectar devotion to the next section. The next section, of course, is about the different rasas or different tastes of different relationships. So this is a very brief introduction in this particular chapter. So we're going to continue reading subordinate ecstatic love. The devotees who always think of Krishna as a superior are in subordinate ecstatic love. To such a devotee, the concept of inferiority to the Lord is very prominent, and he rarely takes interest in any other kind of transcendental loving humor with the Lord. So basically, we're talking about like mostly Shantaras here. Shantaras means to see Krishna as great and just worship Krishna. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. In the Mukunda Mala Stotra compiled by King Kukulakshekara, one of the prayers says, "My dear Lord, you are the deliverer of living entities from the hellish condition of materialistic life. But that does not matter to me. Whether I am elevated to the heavenly platform or remain on this earthly planet, or am dispatched to some hellish planet, that does not matter at all to me. My only prayer is that at the time of my death, I may simply remember your two beautiful feet, which are just like lotus flowers fructifying during the autumn season." So this, of course, is like pretty much mood of awe and reverence and treating Krishna as God. Now, here we're going to get introductions to the other rasas, that is, the other tastes of the other relationships. Relationship is rati. Rasa is the taste of a particular particular relationship. Devotees sometimes confuse the two. Rasa doesn't mean relationship, it means taste for relationship. So we first dealt with Shantaras, which is generally just very much on reverence. Of course, there are Shantaras devotees in the spiritual world, but those devotees have a mixture of servitude and perhaps some of the other types of relationships, like sometimes it's described at the cows. They have some mixture, they may be primarily Shanta, but they have some mixture of Dasha, and sometimes Sakya, and sometimes Vatsalya, not Madhurya, don't worry about that one. So as far as friendship is concerned, those higher grade devotees who are almost like Krishna are considered to be great authorities in the modes of friendly relations with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On that friendly platform, there are different kinds of laughing and joking conversations. An example of such a friendly relationship with Krishna is described in Srimad Bhagavatam when Krishna was once thinking, "Today, while I was engaged in tending the cows in the pasturing ground of Vrindavan, I went to collect some flowers in a beautiful garden. At that time, my friends, the cowherd boys, were unhappy to even to tolerate a 2-minute separation from me. And when they found me, there was competition between us as to who would touch the other first with the flowers we had in hand." One friend criticized Krishna thus, "My dear Damodar, although you have been defeated by Sridham, and I have sufficiently minimized in strength, and have become sufficiently minimized in strength, by a false expression of strength, you have somehow covered your shameful condition of defeat." So there's this like chivalry mixed there. Anyway, just very brief explanation of friendship. Later on, in the Nectar of Devotion, we'll get to the different categories of friends. I mean, some of them are intimate and more intimate. Some of them are the same age as Krishna. There's basically four different. And we'll find out about that later as we go on with the nectar devotion. So, next one is parenthood or superiority. When Mother Yashoda heard that Krishna's cows were being forcibly moved by the strong servants of Kamsa and that the tender coward boys were trying to protect their cows, she began to think, how can I protect these poor boys from the invasion of Kamsa's servants? This is an instance of a superior attitude in a devotee. So, of course, with pure devotional service, the more superior one gets, the more Krishna likes it. And the more inferior you get, it's not, I mean, Krishna likes it, but it's not as relishable by Krishna. So we get to the point after parenthood, of course, we get to the conjugal love, which definitely is not considering Krishna as superior. Basically, the girlfriends of Krishna consider Krishna to be under their control. As soon as Mother Yashoda found her son Krishna returning from the pasturing ground, she immediately began to pat him, touching her fingers to the cheeks of the Lord. Very brief explanation of parental affection. And finally, conjugal love. And above even the humor of Krishna and his parents is the relationship of conjugal love. The Lord and the young gopis exhibit this in different ways, glancing, moving the eyebrows, speaking very sweet words, and exchanging smiles. There's a statement in Govinda Vilasa to this effect. Srimati Radharani was looking for Krishna very anxiously and almost disappointedly. When there is such an indirect expression of conjugal love, there is smiling, astonishment, enthusiasm, lamentation, anger, dread, and sometimes ghastliness. Now here, getting a little brief explanation about the seven indirect rasas. These seven exchanges of conjugal love form another state of ecstatic love. So what Prabhupada is saying here, what is being described, is the seven exchanges in relationship to the seven indirect rasas. In a direct relationship with conjugal love, there is laughter, astonishment, chivalry, lamentation, anger and dread, but there is no ghastliness. So only in an indirect relationship with conjugal love there's ghastliness. These expressions are considered to be great reservoirs of pleasure. When these seven kinds of ecstatic loving exchanges are manifested, they attain the status of steadiness by which the taste of conjugal love expands. So that's a brief introduction to the five basic rasas and the seven indirect rasas. We're going to hear much more about the five and the seven, 12 altogether. Let's go to chapter 33, which describes the indirect rasas or indirect expressions of ecstatic love. And this is also very preliminary, very basic, and it's going to be gotten into with greater detail towards the end of the nectar devotion, and also the rasa bus, which means you have conflicting indirect relationships or indirect relationships that conflict with the direct relationship, and when they're tasteful and when they're not tasteful, when they can be accepted, when they're not accepted. Anyway, I'm not going to explain what that is until we get to that section. So the first one is laughter, my favorite. After he had stolen some yogurt from the pots of the two gopis, Krishna told one of his gopi friends, "My dear, beautiful friend, I can take an oath that I have not stolen even a drop of yogurt from your pot. But still, your friend Radharani is very shamelessly smelling the flavor of my mouth. Kindly forbid her from this devious policy of putting her face near mine." When Krishna was speaking like this, the friends of Radharani could not check their laughter. This is an instance of laughter and ecstatic love. So you have the laughter, which is actually an indirect ras, which is flavoring the direct ras, which is what? Conjugal love, obviously, in this particular case. So the next indirect one is astonishment. Actually, the Sanskrit word is adbhuta. Once Brahma was watching all the cows and the cowherd boys dressed in yellow garments and decorated with valuable jewels. The boys were expanding their forearms and were being worshipped by many hundreds of other Brahmas. All the cowherd boys began to express their joyfulness for being with Krishna, the Supreme Brahman. At that time, Brahma showed his astonishment by exclaiming, "What am I seeing here?" This is an instance of astonishment and ecstatic love. So, of course, Brahma, generally it's described, he has a relationship with Vaishanta and Dasha. Astonishment, which is an indirect. So this story, of course, was when Lord Brahma stole all the calves and the cowherd boys for about a year. And Krishna manifested himself as all the calves and cowherd boys during that year, so their mothers would not miss. And also, so the cowherd boys could marry the gopis during that year. So when Brahma came back, he actually saw that all the cowherd boys and the cows, who were previously calves, were actually expansions of Krishna. And he saw them as having four arms, and many other Brahmas were worshiping them. So Brahma was completely astonished, thinking he had pulled a trick over Krishna, whereas in reality, Krishna had pulled a trick over him. Okay. That's astonishment. So this is just very brief again. There's many manifestations of this indirect rasa astonishment, even in conjugal love, in friendship, in servitude, etc. Chivalry is the next one. On the bank of the Yamuna, once there was a crackling sound of dry leaves, giggling from the cowherd boys and thundering from the sky. Sridham was tightening his belt to fight with Krishna, the conqueror of the demon Aga. This is an instance of chivalry in ecstatic love. Lamentation. In the 10th canto, 7th chapter, verse 25 of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a description of Krishna's being taken away by the whirlwind demon, Trinavarta. As Krishna was being thus carried up into the sky, all the gopis began to cry aloud. They approached Mother Yashoda, stating they could not find the son of Nanda. He had been taken away by a whirlwind. This is an instance of lamentation and ecstatic love. When Krishna was fighting with Kaliya, Mother Yashoda exclaimed, "Krishna is now entrapped within the hoods of the Kaliya snake, and yet I am not tattered to pieces. So I must admit how wonderful is the preserving power of this material body." This is another instance of lamentation in ecstatic love. Anger. So remember, of course, she, Mother Yashoda, and the gopis are situated in the parental relationship. And so that parental relationship is being colored or flavored with this lamentation at this point, and also that's fear, same thing. Anger. When Jatila, the mother of Abhimanyu, saw Krishna wearing a necklace, she could understand the jeweled ornament had been given to him by Radharani. She therefore became absorbed in anger and began to move her eyebrows, expressing her anger in ecstatic love. So, Jatila, her relationship with Krishna, I guess it's not exactly, yeah, it's a type of service she renders to Krishna. Maybe a service. I mean, just a guess, but she helps with conjugal love too. Anyway, it's mixed with anger. Ghastliness. There's a statement by Yamunacharya to this effect: "Since I have begun to enjoy these transcendental exchanges of love, which are always newer and newer, whenever I remember the pleasure of past sex life, my lips curl and I wish to spit on the idea." This is an instance of ecstatic love and ghastliness. Of course, that's also illustrated in the Bhagavad Gita, where you have this verse, Raso Varjam, Raso Pyasa, Param Drishtani Vartate. When one experiences Krishna consciousness, one has a higher taste. So this is what he is experiencing here.
Let me just check the sound on this thing. Should be able to hear now, right? Okay, sometimes this program does a few glitches here and there. Okay, sorry about that. Let's go to Dread. One old devotee said, "My dear Lord, when we are away from you, we become so anxious to see you again, and there is great misery in our lives. But then, when we do see you, there immediately comes the fear of separation. Under the circumstances, both when we see you and when we do not see you, we are subjected to different kinds of tribulation. This is an instance of a contradictory mixture of ecstatic love for Krishna. Such ecstatic love is palatable, and expert critics have compared such ecstatic love to a mixture of curd, sugar candy, and a little black pepper. The combined taste is very palatable." So you have some mixtures here. So when devotees are away from Krishna, they're anxious to see him again, and they have great misery. But when we do see him, then they also fear, come to misery too, because they're fearing separation. So all the time they're subjected to tribulation. So this is a mixture here. Okay. So then we just, I believe this is the final chapter in this section of the Nectar Devotion. "The particular type of ecstatic loving sentiment that develops within the heart of a particular devotee is considered to be a vibhava." That means it's a stimulation. "And the resultant manifestations, such as moving of the eyebrows, fear, astonishment, and smiling, which have been explained before, are called the anubhava." Remember we talked about this? Vibhava means stimulation. Anubhava means how you respond to that stimulation. It's voluntary. "The different causes for developing anubhava and vibhava are called steady ecstasy or sanchari bhava." So sanchari is actually the vyabhachari bhava, which overcomes you intermittently without warning, and you have no control over. "Whenever there's a recitation of poetry or a dramatic play on the different pastimes of Krishna, the audience develops different kinds of transcendental loving service for the Lord. They enjoy different types of vibhava," that means stimulations, "anubhava," voluntary actions, and sanchari bhava, which basically means the intermittent ecstasies which they didn't expect to happen, which they can't control. "No one, while remaining on the material platform, should discuss these different descriptions of bhava and anubhava by quoting different statements of transcendental literatures. Such manifestations are displays of the transcendental pleasure potency of the Lord. One should simply try to understand that on the spiritual platform, there are many varieties of reciprocal love. Such loving exchanges should never be considered to be material. In the Mahabharata, Udyama Parva, it is warned that things which are inconceivable should not be subjected to arguments. Actually, the transactions of the spiritual world are inconceivable to us in our present state of life. Great liberated souls like Rupa Goswami and others have tried to give us some hints of transcendental activities of the spiritual world. But on the whole, these transactions will remain inconceivable to us at the present moment. Understanding the exchanges of transcendental loving service with Krishna is possible only when one is actually in touch with the pleasure potency of the Supreme Lord. In this connection, Sri Rupa Goswami gives an example of the clouds in the sky. The clouds in the sky arise from the ocean, and when the clouds become water again and fall to the ground, they glide back to the ocean. Thus, the pleasure potency of Krishna is compared to the ocean. The pure devotee is the pleasure-possessing cloud, and when he is filled with transcendental loving service, then he can bestow his mercy as a downpour of rain, and the pleasure potency returns to the ocean of Krishna. Whew. Really wonderful description there. All right. Direct and indirect attraction for Krishna. So here's, basically it's going to be the same thing being described here that we just went over before. The five direct rasas and the seven indirect rasas. Just an introduction to them right here. So it's a little repetitive, but it's important so that everybody understands it and remembers it. So there's five direct rasas. I'm going to talk about this before I begin reading. Five direct rasas. Shanta rasa, that's peaceful ras. Adash ras, servitude. Sakya ras, friendship. Vatsalya ras, parental affection. And finally, conjugal ras is the ultimate. All right, let's read about direct and indirect. Transcendental pleasure derived from devotional service can be divided into two groups. Direct devotional service. Let's see, the internet connection, okay. Direct devotional service and indirect devotional service. Direct devotional service is divided into five transcendental humors or flavors. That's rasas again. Humor means rus. Not funny. And indirect devotional services is divided into seven transcendental humors or rasas. In other words, five direct rasas, seven indirect rasas. Direct devotional services are as follows. Neutrality, that's shantaras. Servitude, dasharas. Fraternity, sakyaras. Paternity, that means parental relationship. Vatsalyaras. And conjugal love, maturya ras. Indirect devotional service is divided into laughter, compassion. Here's the seven indirect rasas right here. Laughter, compassion, anger, chivalry, dread, means fear, astonishment, and ghastliness. What does ghastliness mean? Something that's really horrible, like if you go to a butcher and see what the butcher is doing. That's ghastly. Or during a war, you see all the dead bodies. That's ghastly. So again, laughter, compassion, anger, chivalry, dread, astonishment, and ghastliness. Dread is actually fear, in case you didn't know that. Devotional service can therefore be divided into 12 types, each of which has a different color. The colors are white, multicolored, orange, red, light green, gray, yellow, off-white, smoky, pink, black, and cloudy. The 12 different kinds of transcendental humors are controlled by different incarnations of God, such as Kapila, Madhava, Upendra, Nrsingha, Nandanandana, Balaram, Kurma, Kalki, Raghava, that's Lord Ramchandra, Bhargava, Varaha, and Matsya. Sustenance, manifestation, expansion, reflection, and lamentation are the five visible symptoms in exchanges of ecstatic love. So sustenance means basically, you know, just to maintain something. Manifestation when it becomes manifest. Expansion when it grows, reflection, thinking about it, and lamentation when you lose it or when you're separated from Krishna. The test of the devotional service can therefore be made in terms of these five symptoms. In the devotional service of neutrality, there is sustenance. In chivalrous devotional service, there is expansion. You don't have to remember all these. In compassionate devotional service, there is reflection. In angry devotional service, there's lamentation, and so on. So Prabhupada doesn't expect us to remember all those. An apparently pitiable condition in devotional service may appear distressing to the inexperienced student, but the feelings of the devotee in this pitiable condition are considered to be ecstatic by expert devotees. And Prabhupada gives an example. For example, the subject matter of the Ramayana is sometimes considered pitiable and distressing to the heart, but actually that is not the fact. The Ramayana narrates how Lord Ram was sent to the forest by his father just when he was going to be enthroned. After Lord Ram's departure, Maharaj Dasharath, his father, died. In the forest, his wife Sita Devi was kidnapped by Ravana, and there was a great war. When Sita Devi was finally delivered, one second, from the clutches of Ravana, Ravana's whole family and kingdom and Ravana himself were vanquished. When Sita Devi came home, she was tried by fire, and after some days, she was again banished to the forest. All these subjects in the Ramayana seem very pitiable, and they may appear very distressing to the reciter, but actually they are not. Otherwise, why would Hanuman, the great devotee of Lord Ramchandra, read daily about the activities of Lord Ramchandra as described in the Ramayana itself? The fact is that in any of the above-mentioned 12 transcendental humors of devotional service, everything is transcendentally pleasing. So let me explain a little bit how that's possible when you have this separation, misery, threats, and everything like that. How is it transcendentally pleasing? Because when one is thinking of the Lord in any of those humors, one is connected with the Lord. One is there with the Lord. For example, let's talk about separation, lamentation here. In separation, one is thinking very deeply about the Lord. As they say, absence makes the heart grow fonder. But that thought of the Lord in separation connects, and the thought of the Lord when one's Lord, and the chanting of the Lord's holy names connects the devotee to the Lord. I don't know why we're getting all these messages. Your internet connection is unstable. So, and any service you do for the Lord connects the devotee to the Lord. Danger connects the devotee to the Lord. The Lord is there. Every time someone remembers Krishna, chants his names, does service to him, laments about being separated from him, one is with Krishna. There's actually no separation for such a devotee because emotionally he's connected to the Lord and the Lord is connected in his remembrance or with his remembrance. So, and then one is ecstatic. Even when we find Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stating in his Shikshashtika prayer, Yugaitam Nimishena Chakshusha Pravishaitam Shunyaitam Jagatsarvam Govindavidahename. O Krishna, feeling your separation, I would consider it a moment to be like actually more than 12 years or more, like a yuga cycle. That's a long time. Tears are flowing from my eyes like torrents of rain. I'm feeling that the whole world is void in your absence. So that may appear to be a very miserable statement, but it's a very ecstatic statement because one is feeling like that. One is connected with Krishna. You're never disconnected from Krishna. And the feelings of disconnection connect you more to Krishna. The feelings of separation connect you more to Krishna than practically the feelings of when you're actually face to face with Krishna. Hard to believe. In the material world, you were always separated from your beloved, materially. I'm not talking about spiritual relationships here, so don't get angry with me. So in the material world, you may be holding hands with your brother, with your beloved, not brother, sorry. But sometimes brother, with your beloved. You may be holding hands and think, oh, I'm very close to my beloved. But you're not. Because you're so far apart, because your mentality, your thoughts, your desires are completely out of sync. That's a fact. Believe it or not, they are out of sync. You're on a different wavelength. It's like a radio. For example, you may turn your radio on. I think, oh, it's a nice radio. But if it's not on the right channel, then it's useless. But if it's on the right channel, you can be thousands of miles away from where the broadcast station is, and you're going to be hearing nice sound. Of course, the Hare Krishna mantra, hopefully. So this is the explanation. So, of course, the Ramayana, reading about the Ramayana, it's very, let's say, pitiable, very heartbreaking, and sometimes even I get upset when I read the Ramayana. How could Lord Ram do this? How could he send Sita Devi into the forest? How could he ask her to enter into the fire? I know he didn't actually ask Sita Devi to enter into the fire. It was Maya Sita. But still, you know, it's very heart-wrenching, this story. Srila Rupa Goswami mourns in this connection for persons who are in the fire of false renunciation, the dry speculative habit, and who neglect devotional service. Persons who are attached to the ritualistic ceremonies recommended in the Vedas and the impersonal Brahman cannot relish the transcendental pleasure of devotional service. Srila Rupa Goswami advises, therefore, that devotees who have already tasted the nectar of devotion be very careful to protect devotional service from such dry speculators, formal ritualistic elevationists. Well, that's an expression. Formal ritualistic elevationists. You know, who want to elevate themselves by performing rituals. That's karma mimamsa. And impersonal salvationists. You know, these are big words here. People just interested in saving themselves and then merging into some impersonal energy. Devotees should protect their valuable jewel of spiritual love from the clutches of thieves and burglars. In other words, a pure devotee should not describe devotional service and its different analytical aspects to dry speculators and false renouncers. In other words, these sort of discussions we're having right now, reading the Nectar of Devotion, should only be done amongst devotees who are committed devotees. Otherwise, people will criticize, people will lose faith, people will think this and be incredulous, you know, how could this actually be? And this way they'll be committing offenses. And therefore we have this very interesting offense on chanting the holy names of the Lord to instruct the faithless about the glories of the holy name. Also, we can expand on that to instruct the faithless about the intimate aspects of devotional service. Those who are not devotees can never achieve the benefits of devotional service. For them, the subject of devotional service is always very difficult to understand. Only persons who have dedicated can relish the real transcends the status of ecstatic love and thus become situated. Internet connected. It keeps getting these messages. Internet connections unstable. When one transcends the status of ecstatic love and thus becomes situated on the highest platform of pure goodness, one is understood to have cleansed the heart of all material contamination. So let me unpack that. Woo. So when one transcends, why are we going to want to transcend the status of ecstatic love and become situated on the highest platform of pure goodness, one is understood to have cleansed the heart of all material contamination. I'll explain that. Because in the progressive path of devotional service, you have different stages. First stage, do shraddha. One has initial faith, initial trust, tata sadhu sangota. One begins to associate with the devotees. And then bhajana kriya. One begins to execute some of the items of bhajan, which means chanting 16 rounds, following the four regulated principles, eating prasadam, attending the mangalarati, different things like that. And then by doing that, you get rid of gradually of the unwanted things in your heart, like lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, fear. Phew. And by trying to gradually get rid of those things, you become steady in devotional service. It's called nishtha. And when you actually become steady, you can get a real steady taste. That's called aruchi. And when you have a real steady taste, then you become detached from everything in this material world and completely attached to Krishna. That's called a shakti. And then after a shakti, you come to the stage of ecstatic love, which is called bhava. So that's preliminary to pure love of God. Why is it preliminary? Because still you are not an absolutely pure devotee. Because still there's a tendency, or maybe not a tendency, but a possibility, even though you have no more anarthas, there's a possibility if you're inattentive of anartha coming. You haven't completely become selfless at that point. Even if one's on the stage of bhava, one is loving Krishna, but still you're enjoying that bhava. You know, it's really ecstatic to be ecstatic. That's kind of funny. It's ecstatic to be ecstatic. So you're enjoying that bhava, and you don't want to let it go. However, in pure devotional service, prema, which is the highest stage after bhava, one is not even concerned about their ecstasies. One simply wants to give Krishna pleasure, even if it doesn't give one ecstasies. Of course, it does give one ecstasy. It's not that one becomes miserable when one attains the stage of prema. But one's consciousness is no longer, you know, how will I advance and experience all these different stages? And no longer thinking of when I will come to prema, but thinking simply, I want Krishna to be happy. Whatever happens to me is inconsequential. That's prema. Like the gopis, they were ready to go to hell to cure Krishna's headache. I mean, there's that famous story that there was a statement, Krishna had a headache, and he said, the only thing that will cure my headache is the dust of my devotees' lotus feet. And Narada Muni went around to all the devotees and said, please give us your dust. And the devotee said, no, we give the dust from our feet, and the dust touches Krishna, we will go to hell. And the gopi said, please take this dust. And Narada Muni said, why? Aren't you afraid of going to hell? And the gopi said, we don't care. We want Krishna to be happy. So that is actually pure devotional service right there. We simply want Krishna to be happy. And if the ecstasy is interfering with Krishna's happiness, we don't want the ecstasy. That's pure devotional service. Like this one servant of Krishna, I believe it was Duruka, was fanning Krishna, and he was feeling ecstatic, and he basically cursed his ecstasy because the ecstasy was interfering with the fan. He was causing him to shake a little bit. And so that's pure devotional service. So this is what it means when it says one transcends the status of ecstatic love, the platform of bhava, it goes above that, and thus becomes situated in the highest platform of pure goodness, that's called Vishuddhisattva. One is understood to have cleansed the heart of all material contamination. There's absolutely no anarthas coming back. We have an example of Bharat Maharaj, who was on the platform of bhava, experiencing all these, maybe not all of them, but many of the ecstatic symptoms. But he became attracted, thinking himself the benefactor of a little deer, and he neglected his spiritual a baby deer in his next life. Baby deer, and when he became a baby deer and grew up, he did not hang out amongst the deer, he hung out amongst the sages. And then in his next life, he was even more careful. He acted like a Dumbo, so nobody would bother him. Nobody would encourage him to get a job, get married, just so that he can be absorbed 24/7 in Krishna's service. So he learned his lesson, but it took like two lives to do that. He was on his third life, but the two lives of lessons. So, don't make that mistake. We don't need any devotees taking birth as deer or as cockroaches or cats or mice or whatever. In that pure stage of life, one can taste this nectar, and this tasting capacity is technically called rasa or transcendental mood. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta summary of the second division of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in the matter of general devotional service. And the next division, we get into more definitive descriptions of the different rasas, the 12 different rasas, the 5 direct rasas, and the 7 indirect rasas. So we're not going to go ahead to that now. We're going to take some questions from you all. So it's coming up a very ecstatic section of the Nectar Devotion. Of course, as we hear descriptions and delineations and categories of each of these different stages or each of these different rasas, we're going to get plenty of examples, and the examples are so wonderful here in the Nectar Devotion. So, we will take some questions. Give me a second. I have to give you permission to ask questions. Okay, who wants to ask a question?
I can ask a question, Gurudev.
Yes.
So you were just talking about prema being that you put Krishna before your own happiness, and in fact, your own happiness is inconsequential.
Yeah.
In the material world, it seems that we get some sort of like taste of that, but it doesn't last. And even sometimes in devotional service, we see that, you know, we're just like, yeah, I'm hungry or I'm tired or whatever, but who cares? I have my service to do. But that doesn't really last. It's not sustained.
That's right.
So is that a shadow attachment, or is that what's happening there when that comes up? But
we're getting a little taste. I mean, Krishna's show giving us a little taste of what pure devotional service is. But at the same time, you know, we're not completely purified. So there's still some self-interest there. That's the point. There's still some self-interest before one reaches the stage of prema. There's still some self-interest. And even, let's say, you know, sometimes when we think, well, I'm just going to push through this, I'm tired, I don't care about what I feel, it's sort of a bravado. Do you know what bravado is?
Yeah.
You know, it makes you feel good about yourself. If I actually think about it, the times I did that, it's just like, it's almost like a false ego thing. You know, it's really mixed. A pure devotee is not mixed like that. So when we do that, you know, I'm just thinking, first of all, I'm thinking, oh, the devotees will see how advanced I am. And then I'll, not only will they see how advanced I am, but I will see how advanced I am. That's even more important than them. I will see how advanced I am. I'm a great hero.
Is it like Karna and the bug that's biting him while Drona's head is on his lap, or Parashram's head is on his lap?
I don't know what Drona's consciousness was, but he was basically thinking it's my duty not to disturb my guru. As far as whether he was thinking, yeah, it's a kshatriya. That's true. Actually, it's a good question. Because a kshatriya is in the mode of passion, and there's pride there. So a kshatriya out of pride can tolerate a lot of things, like biting the bullet. Like in the old days in America, if someone got hit by a bullet and they had to remove the bullet, they put another bullet in his mouth. And guess what? He would tolerate it. But a Brahman, someone in the mode of goodness, is not going to be able to tolerate it because he doesn't have that pride. He's going to scream and yell. You know, if a bug was going to bite me, I wouldn't just like grit my teeth. I would wake up my guru. I mean, I have to be honest. It's not that I would just say, I don't want to disturb Prabhupada. I couldn't do it. But so yes, you're right. Actually, you're right about Karna. It was a pride.
Is that a perverted reflection of...
Of what?
The selflessness of prema?
Yeah, I mean, it's all, yeah, it's a perverted, either a perverted reflection or, let's say, a exhibition. It's a perverted exhibition rather than a perverted. reflection. Aspiring devotee, a real devotee doesn't even consider himself a devotee, he considers himself to be an aspiring devotee. So that should be our mood. And then there's servants. We're servants of everybody. We're servants of those who are not Krishna conscious, trying to help them come. We've been given this benediction, this blessing by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada of having the highest knowledge and the highest path. So we should utilize that knowledge and utilize that potency to be remember, you're a servant, I'm a servant, you're a servant, we're all servants. All right, one more question from someone. Good, Sumuk just sent a message. Good news, they found the vaccine for COVID-19. Let's see, as Shakespeare said, much is lost twixt the cup and the lip. So, let's see. Let's see what happens.
Hare Krishna Gurudev, Dandavat Pranam.
Yes, do you have the vaccine with you?
No. I'm not hopeful it is going to be a good vaccine.
Anyway, this material world is miserable. You have the vaccine against one disease, another disease will come.
Yes.
And death will come also. So I'm not really completely ecstatic, although if I could travel again, it would be very nice.
Yes.
Okay, so you have a question, Nalini Khan?
Yes, Gurudev, as you mentioned, out of the sink, the expression that regarding the material relationship, you gave example of a couple. How about a mother and a daughter, mother and a son, who are devotees, and those other mother and daughter or other mother and son who are aspiring devotees? So is there both types are still out of the sink?
What is the question?
You mentioned about the material relationships.
If so you have a mother and son, yeah.
So these material relationships are like out of the sink.
Out of sync, yeah.
Yes.
Because each person in the material relationship has different desires and different intentions. Although it's not really apparent. Just like, I mean, the example sometimes I give of someone who takes care of a dog.
Yes.
So the dog is licking the master.
Yes.
And the master is thinking that this dog loves me. The dog is kissing me.
Yes.
But the dog is actually, well, the dog is thinking. The dog is actually just thinking, this tastes good.
Yes.
I mean, I'll give you an example. Just yesterday, I went and saw some cows, some devotee cows.
Yes.
They had tipak on. So I went to see some cows yesterday, and I walked out to one of the cows and put my hand. The cow was licking my hand. I thought, oh, the cow loves me. But really, with intelligence, I knew that the cow didn't. I mean, the cow may love me, but the licking was not a symptom of love. It just happened to like the salt on top of my hand. Mm-hmm. So it's something like that in material relationships. There's definitely not a meeting of minds. I mean, it may appear to be a very heavy statement.
Yeah.
But in spiritual relationships, yes. You can have husbands and wives and friends have a meeting of mind when it's based on Krishna. I think it was Shakespeare who said that things fall apart where the center will not hold. So when Krishna is the center, there can be a meeting of minds and true relationships even in this world.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you know, I mean, let's say you go shopping, okay, and you go to buy a car, and the car dealer is so nice to you. He treats you like you're his best friend. I don't know if you've ever bought it. Have you ever bought a car?
Yes.
From a car dealer?
Yes, Gurudev.
Yes, no?
Yes, Gurudev.
And they're very nice to you, isn't it? I mean, just like, how are you? How's an Alini Khan family?
Yes,
good. That was your wife. Yes. That was your little baby daughter. You know, whatever.
Coffee.
Yeah. And that they're so nice, and you're thinking, oh, boy, this guy likes me. But he's thinking, you know, we got another here. And he's gonna sell you a car that he tells you he's not making any profit on, but he's making like $5,000 profit.
Yes.
And then he sells you an extended warranty for the car. Do they have that in New Zealand too?
Yes, Gurudev.
Then he makes another $2,000 on, and you're thinking, you know, he's really doing me a favor, but actually he's thinking something different.
Yes.
So spiritual relationships are different. One who has spiritual relationships doesn't see things like that.
So that means, Gurudev, it's only the relationship of spiritual master and a disciple, and God brothers and God sisters, or family as a whole.
All devotees have spiritual relationships, regardless of who they're initiated by, because they care for the other person.
Okay, Gurudev.
Yeah. They have, you have a spiritual relationship with your wife.
Yes.
And the relationship with your wife is you listen to her and you do what she says, and that's a spiritual relationship.
Yes, Gurudev.
And then you both listen to what your daughter tells you to do. But anyway, if it's centered on Krishna, then it can have a meeting of minds, a meeting of consciousness, a meeting of souls. Otherwise, you don't know what the other person is thinking, what the other person's intentions are.
Yes.
But spiritually, yes. So there's true honesty, true revealing the heart, true revealing the soul.
Yes.
Okay, we have to end now.
Thank you.
Okay. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.